You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Our cell phones contain more personal information than you may realize. They can reveal when we sleep, when we wake, where we spend our money, what we're doing instead of our work, and even how we'll vote in November's elections. And both law enforcement agencies and advertisers can access that information. Reporter Peter Maas and blogger Megher Rajagopalan join forces to investigate the dark side of owning a smartphone. And their New York Times article, "That's No Phone, That's My Tracker," was written as part of a collaboration between ProPublica and The Times. Peter Maas has contributed to The Times and The New Yorker. Megher Rajagopalan has written for Time Asia, The Wall Street Journal, and Foreign Policy. Welcome to our show.
Great to be here.
Are all the things that make a smartphone smart two-edged swords?
I think so. I mean, I think they do a lot of wonderful things because they allow us to stay in touch with what's going on in the world, with our email, with our friends, with the location that we're at when we're lost, things of that sort. Definitely positive. But then there are negatives because that means also, because the way these systems, these phones work, that other people can also have access to the same information, where we are, what we're doing, who we're seeing, what we're buying.
I mentioned a few things that can be revealed in my introduction. Is that the complete list? What other kinds of personal information can our phones record?
Well, all kinds of things. Everything from your income range to where you live, which could be contained in your billing records, to things like who you're calling, where you've been. Some studies even show that they can predict where you're going to be in 24 hours based on your historical data as well as the data of your friends.
Could they track us if we didn't have GPS capabilities in our phones?
Yes, because phones kind of operate in terms of location on two systems. There's GPS, which is satellite-based, but then there's also the cell phone towers, which kind of are used to triangulate people's location. So even if you don't have a GPS-enabled phone, they can track you. In fact, they need to. That's the way the systems work, through their cell phone towers.
What about if we just turn our phones off whenever we are not planning to use them?
Well, I think that would work for probably the majority of people, but there are certain types of malware that have been discovered that make it, if you have it on your phone, it makes it appear that your phone has been turned off when in reality it hasn't been turned off at all. So in that case, if you were one of those people, the only way to really turn off would be to remove your battery. And that's particularly true of people who are, you know, under some sort of suspicion or maybe in certain authoritarian regimes.
And I think one of the problems with turning it off is just, what's the point of having a phone
right. If
it's not on? I mean, if it's off, you can't use it to surf the web, to get your email, to text your friends, to see where you are, all of those things.
Although we should turn it off when we go to the movies or the theater.
That would be nice. That would be very nice.
And too many people don't, and they take their calls. But the GPS technology just seemed to be an incredible godsend with cell phones. If it's tracking our whereabouts through our phones, what kind of personal information can it reveal about us?
It can reveal all kinds of information in the sense of, okay, if the GPS technology, and again, we're not just talking about GPS technology, we're also talking about cell phone tower technology, because those are the two ways that cell phone companies keep track of where you are.
Well, you can turn off what's known as location services, but does that help in any way?
It helps, but again, you're disabling, you know, the phone from doing the sorts of things that you have the phone there to do. So, you know, yes, there are all kinds of things you can do to limit the tracking. You also are in the process, however, limiting what the phone is doing for you, as well as kind of what the phone is being used for by other people. So it has, you know, drawbacks and benefits as well.
In the article, you say our phones can tell us if a person, I'm quoting, is a weekly churchgoer, a heavy drinker, a regular at the gym, an unfaithful husband, you could have said wife as well, an outpatient receiving medical treatment, and the list goes on and on. How can our phones trace such intimate details of our lives?
So first I want to add, why do phones trace us in the first place? We think of it as sort of like GPS mapping, where you do a search and try to figure out where you're going, but it's actually more than that. So imagine you're driving in your car and you're talking to somebody on your phone. So if you're driving a long distance, you'll probably hit more than one cell phone tower. So to get you the right kind of service, the cell phone needs to know like roughly where you are, so it can position you in the vicinity of the right tower. So for that reason, cell phone location data is necessary and useful, but it also has this byproduct of telling the company and telling whoever gets the data where you've been.
So in the past, they used to have to attach a little device to the onto the car to follow you. Now all they have to do is hope that you have a cell phone.
And most people do. And that's one of the interesting things these days. The police no longer, I mean, they still are putting tracking devices onto cars, but much less than they would have done in the past, because cell phone data gives them so much more, because it gives them the same location information when you're in your car, but also when you're outside of your car, wherever else you're going, when you're just walking or when you're at home.
Do phones gather information in the way that your credit card issuer can or Google does?
Yeah, they certainly can. It's definitely a very rich and very different pool of data that mobile phone operators are able to gather.
It's not just the mobile phone operators we're talking about. It's also the folks who operate the apps that you're using on your mobile phone. So there are various different collectors of the data, and the cell phone companies are just one of the collectors. The folks who operate the apps that you're using are also collecting the data that you're transmitting over the
But apps, cell phone. When you get onto an app, sometimes they'll ask you if it's okay if they track you, or I can't remember the exact phrase, and you can say allow or don't allow. Does that protect you in any way?
It certainly protects you, but one of the problems with those kind of pop-up warnings is that they don't tell you if you allow it, what really you're allowing. Okay, they can track you. What are they doing with the information that they're getting from you? How long are they keeping it for? Are they selling it to other people? Those kinds of things usually are not involved in that little kind of like okay or not okay pop-up window that you get on cell phones.
Well, when you add an app, when you first open your cell phone, you're usually given a long thing that you have to eventually agree to. It's pages and pages and tiny type. Most of us just simply go to the back, the end, assuming everything's okay, and say, except, are we giving away an awful lot of rights when we say, yes, I accept?
Yeah, I think you definitely are, because even though most people don't fully read those things, you've still agreed to...
I don't know anybody who's read those things.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it would take you years and years to read all of the agreements that we all sign every day for a different software.
And the problem with those agreements is that they really do give a lot of rights to people who have the data, because with all of these companies, whether we're talking about cell phone carriers or the app developers, the only way that they can get in trouble for violating your privacy is if they do something that they say they're not going to do. So those long privacy policies that you never read, that frankly, even myself as a privacy reporter, I rarely read, they tend to give away the farm in terms of the information and what these companies are allowed to do with it.
My guests are Peter Maas and Megha Rajagopalan, who collaborated on an article called That's No Phone, That's My Tracker. It's also a collaboration of ProPublica and the New York Times. So we agree to all of those things, and we do it with pretty much all of the cell phone providers. But we've heard recently that T-Mobile has resisted giving up some of this information. Why have they a different policy than Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and all the others?
Well, T-Mobile eventually released this information in terms of how many requests they had received from law enforcement for the location and other call data of their subscribers. And the interesting thing is, I mean, the global number, and this was quite shocking, it came out about, it was now a week and a half ago, is the major cell phone carriers in America had responded 1.5 million times, approximately, to requests for subscriber information from law enforcement in just a year. 1.5 million times.
It's that really sounds like a lot more criminal activity than we're aware of.
Well, it's either a lot more criminal activity than we're aware of, or, of course, a lot more people are having their records accessed by law enforcement agencies, even though they haven't done anything wrong.
What does the data look like? Is it a map, a list of coordinates, a written list of origins and destinations?
I don't think that we really know that, because these are, for the most part, internal company records. And then they're really under no obligation to show us in that much detail what they hold on to.
Although I'm wondering whether, if I were looking for a job, whether it would be a good idea if I were a geographer or a data analyst.
Certainly, there are a lot of new jobs for data analysis in cell phone companies, and from what I understand, the phone companies are really trying to move faster into that space and do more R&D when it comes to data analysis.
There was a wonderful headline on a story in the Guardian newspaper the other day. Actually, it was online, Guardian, where it was described mobile data as the new oil of the digital world, because this data is actually incredibly valuable because it's used for where you are, what you do, what you purchase, to offer you more services, to sell you more things.
And is that the same as what's being called spatial data?
It's all, you know, we're talking about different sorts of data which fall into kind of this general category of, you know, digital data, cellular data, et cetera.
What is spatial data and how does it work?
Well, I think spatial data is one of the categories. You know, they're all very vague.
Yeah.
This is such a new field in the sense of the digital data that's provided, particularly by your cell phones, and the locational data that's involved in it, that a lot of these terms kind of are somewhat transitory and cross over
each other. But isn't this where a smartphone can reveal where we are?
Talking about location data, and you know, spatial data is another way of saying it. Perhaps people use these terms in different ways, so we're getting into kind of this interesting murky territory.
Well, if a smartphone can reveal that we're in a building, can it also show where we are in the building, what floor, what room?
Well, it depends. So it used to be that if you lived in a suburban or rural area, it wasn't very precise how well a phone could track your location, because of course cell towers would be very far from each other. But now, because there are certain buildings where there'll be like many, many people, like parking garages or your shopping mall, cell phone companies will install little boxes all over the place, and those are called microcells, and that helps the phone company give you better reception, but it also provides them with very precise location data. So in theory, they could tell whether you're in the Starbucks or in the clothing store next door, even that precise.
But they can't tell whether you're on the third floor or the fourth floor.
Oh, they can. If your building has microcells on particular floors, then they know, according to which microcell is kind of closest to your phone, which floor you're on. So if this building that we're in has microcells on different floors, and it might, I have no idea, the phone company knows right now that you're on the eighth floor. If you go up to the ninth floor and your phone connects to the nearest microcell, which is on the ninth floor, they know you are now on the ninth floor. They can see you moving around the building if they have the microcells on these floors.
That would be very helpful if we were looking for Osama bin Laden in this building. who wants to access all this information about us? First of all, where is it stored? And is it stored for a long time?
Yeah, so depending on the different kind of information, they're all stored for different lengths. And the reason we know most of that information is because of Freedom of Information Act requests that were sent to the Department of Justice. It's very unusual that this data is sort of disclosed voluntarily. But the range is from, you know, just a few days for things like actual location, for if you like made a 911 call that's just stored for a few days, to several months or even years, depending on which phone company it is.
And what's done with that data? Do they sell it to advertisers? Do they sell it to law enforcement?
Well, they provide it to law enforcement when law enforcement asks.
So they don't charge them.
And they do charge law enforcement different amounts of money. It's not really clear kind of whether this is actually a profit center for them. And there's kind of, you know, I think most people agree that actually for cell phone companies this is kind of a hassle, but they do it because it's what law enforcement wants them to do.
Most of them say that they even lose money on the operation because they don't go out of their way to charge law enforcement for every request that they fulfill.
Mm-hmm. A listener wants to know if pagers have the same tracking technology. Do you know?
That I'm not sure.
That's a good, you know, pagers to me are so 30 Rock we didn't look at pagers, actually. It's a good question.
Peter Maas and Megha Rajagopalan, they've collaborated on That's No Phone, That's My Tracker. It's also a collaboration of ProPublica and the New York Times. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. If you want to maintain total privacy, do you need to get rid of your cell phone? Well, Peter Maas and Megha Rajagopalan, I'm sorry, it is a long name, tell us that perhaps tracker is a more accurate name for our cell phones than phone. In fact, I think it's been revealed that by some British company that people using the cell phone as a phone is the fifth most popular use of the device.
This was a survey that was done by O2, a British cell phone carrier, and it looked into smartphone use, and it found that actually making calls was the fifth most popular use of a smartphone. The most popular ones were, correct me if I get this list wrong,
okay,
web browsing, checking social media, listening to music, and there's one...
Texting must be.
And there was a fourth reason, and okay, actually making a phone call on your smartphone is only the fifth most popular use of it. And so this survey and then other kind of, you know, ways to judge what people are using their phones for kind of led us to kind of think like, well, why are we calling them phones? I mean, if actually talking on them isn't what we're principally using them for, and why should we call them that? Is that something that actually helps us or hurts us in terms of understanding what these things are really used for and what they're really doing?
On the other hand, many people are giving up their landlines and only using smartphones as their telephones.
Right.
So, but you can also use your smartphone as a way to send email messages. So maybe they're just communication phones.
Well, there's been a real interesting kind of struggle for people to figure out what the right word is for these things. Do we call them mini computers? Do we call them robots or something like that? Because one of these things about smartphones is that they are just gobbling up, and this isn't necessarily in a negative way, but they are gobbling up the functions that a lot of other devices used to fulfill, whether it's a watch, whether it's a laptop, whether it's an alarm clock. It is all now coming together in this smartphone. Younger people particularly, but older people as well, are beginning to just do most of their web browsing on their smartphone. So again, why are we calling it a phone if actually what you're mostly doing with it is browsing the web, for example?
Or as I see on the subway, playing some game using your phone or...
Right, Angry Birds.
or using it as a source of music. So we mentioned earlier that they store this data. Why do they have to store it?
So one of the reasons that they do store it is because it's required by law, just in case, for at least a certain period of time, in case law enforcement has to subpoena it or request it. But another reason is because data analysis is still such a new field, and they do have this rich trove of data that they're getting from subscribers, and they haven't necessarily figured out how to monetize it yet. And there's a feeling that if they hold on to the data, it could become valuable.
Well, has there been any... have we heard of any cases where someone is hacked into cell phone companies to retrieve some of this data?
No, we haven't. I'm looking here at Mega. I am not aware of folks hacking into cell phone companies and getting some of this sensitive location data. And that's not really, you know, the problem that people are looking at and are concerned about now. The problem is that this very sensitive data is, A, being handed over to law enforcement on a massive scale with
right,
very little judicial oversight. And the problem is, B, that it is really not clear what and how much the phone companies are doing with this data in terms of using it for marketing purposes, in terms of sharing it with other third-party entities.
Well, when we purchase a smartphone, or the tracker as you call it, are we signing that document which will permit the company to store the personal data?
Yeah, we basically are, because once you sign that subscriber agreement, you've pretty much signed on to the business practices that smartphone company uses.
Has anyone proposed legislation that would restrict this flow of information?
Yeah, there's actually a bill in the House called the GPS Act, and that specifically addresses this issue of what does law enforcement have to go through to get historical location data. And it says that they need to first obtain a warrant before they can get it.
A listener wants to know if there's certain types of cell phones, like the contract versus the prepaid, flip phone versus smartphone, offer more privacy.
So first of all, I want to make clear, this is something that after reading this article, a lot of my friends and family asked me, like, if I don't have a smartphone, is it safer for me? Or like, do they have significantly less information about me? And the answer to that is that even if you don't have GPS on your phone, cell tower data is now so accurate that it's almost as accurate as GPS. So really having a so-called like stupid phone is not really going to make you that much more private.
Victor in Ramsey, New Jersey writes, at least one aspect of tracking that's beneficial for the community, Google Maps displaying the traffic based on a large number of inputs from cell phone users.
Absolutely. There's a tremendous amount of wonderful stuff that is being done and can be done with this data, you know, particularly, I mean, not just in America, I mean, also in the third world in terms of tracking populations when right. there are emergencies, things of that sort. You know, actually, if you want to know where people are going, where they're fleeing to in an event of a natural or political disaster, because they all now have cell phones, you can get that information much more quickly with that data as opposed to, you know, trying to just be on the roads counting heads.
And it's being predicted now that the GPS device will, in the near future, warn you about traffic jams, not just tell you which route is the most efficient, at least according to their estimation. It isn't right. always.
Well, I wouldn't say, I don't think it's a GPS device per se, but it's apps and the, mm-hmm. the software and the hardware that they're attached to that can do that or that will do that. And this is, you know, the story that we wrote is not an anti-smartphone or anti-GPS or anti-location data story. I don't think it's a negative picture. It's a complex picture because what we are able to receive and get from these things is fantastic. But then what we're also giving up is problematic, and people need to pay attention to that. And maybe in the way of laws or whatnot, do something because it's a new, gray, quite fascinating and problematic area as well.
By giving it the title, that's no phone, that's my track. You are suggesting a dark side.
Suggesting a dark side, to be sure, but also a positive side. I mean, to me, you know, tracking is also a positive thing. You know, keeping track of your email, keeping track of your friends, keeping track of the weather, keeping track of the news. These are positive attributes, and that's the tracking is a word that applies to that, but it also applies to a dark side as well, which is why that particular word I find is useful because it does kind of work both ways, which is the way that these phones operate, I think, too.
Peter Mass and Mega. Rajagopalan, they've collaborated on an article for the New York Times, a collaboration between ProPublica and the New York Times. It's called That's No Phone, That's My Tracker. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In a 2009 case, a defendant alleged that the police had illegally wiretapped his phone. What did the court decide?
This is the D.C. Circuit. I think you're referring to is the D.C., the Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Court Circuit Appeals Court decision. And that was something that we quoted. If we're talking about the same thing here.
Yes.
That was actually something really quite interesting that we quoted from the decision because the Appeals Court decision that, you know, we're referencing in the story basically said that the problem with police GPS tracking is that the police can figure out if somebody is a churchgoer, can figure out if somebody is associating with certain political groups, can figure out if somebody is seeing a doctor, is that an outpatient or anything like that, and not just figure out any one of those things, but figure out all of those things at the same time. And that these kind of raise very important privacy and unreasonable search issues that, you know, have not really been settled yet by any, you know, Supreme Court decision except for one, the Jones decision, which was kind of just partial and the first of what probably will be many.
If we're going to a certain medical specialist, for example, don't want people to know that we have this problem, they can find out through our cell phone.
Right, exactly.
And you say also our political affiliations, if we don't do anything, if we don't give money to a political party, does it really matter? How would they know?
Well, if we don't give money to a political party, but let's say we go to political demonstrations or political rallies, then they will know that. And one of the things, too, and we didn't go into this in the story, but, you know, a lot of folks, their smartphones are not their personal property. It's a smartphone that's issued by their employer. So, for example, you know, this data, let's say you're going to one, somebody is going to a diabetes clinic and you don't want your employer necessarily to know about that. Well, you know, they have much easier access to this location data that shows that you've gone to this diabetes clinic than otherwise would be the case.
Well, how do law enforcement agencies filter through all the data?
Well, in most cases, they're not asking for giant troves of data. They're just asking for specific data. But there are these things called tower dumps where, for instance, if a crime has taken place in a certain location, they'll ask for all of the phone numbers in the vicinity of a certain cell phone tower near that location. So you can imagine, like, if, for example, it was Times Square, that could be thousands and thousands of numbers.
How does the GPS technology impact with social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, or MySpace? Do they purchase our spatial data?
So that's sort of a different thing for most people because when you're using apps that act and, you know, websites that access your GPS data, there's more of a conscious turning over of your location. Like, for instance, if you check in somewhere on Foursquare, you're really choosing to, you know, tell the whole world you're eating frozen yogurt or something. But for your cell phone, you might not really be conscious that you're giving it away.
With new apps coming out all the time that help consumers find their friends or family, will the people we know be able to track our whereabouts? And will we be able to track each other?
So that's actually possible because I think all of the big cell phone companies in the U.S. offer a certain service where if you're on a family plan, then you can sign on to know where your kids or where your spouse are at any given time. And people can choose that as sort of a safety thing.
On the other hand, will people we don't know be able to track where we are?
It doesn't look like that's going on at this point, but
I mean, there are all sorts of people to say that they're my friend, but I wouldn't necessarily describe them as such.
Well, and there also is kind of the question of malware. If somebody can get access to your phone, whether it's a physical or virtual sense, and place malware on it, you know, malware can do so much these days that these questions that you're asking, can somebody kind of track me even though they're not at the phone company, even though they're not part of my family plan? These, though, at the moment, perhaps being theoretical questions, are most likely going to be quite real questions, if they're not already, probably in the very near future.
We get ads popping up all the time on our computers, but they don't happen on our cell phones. Is that something that we're going to start seeing more of?
Yeah, that's from what we're hearing, that's certainly something that the cell phone companies are working on, how to bring you targeted advertising to your phone.
You recently, Mega, wrote an article saying that the only person cell phone companies won't share the surveillance information with is the owner,
right,
him or herself.
Right.
Why not?
That's a very perplexing irony to me. So basically what we did at ProPublica was we had four people who all used one of the four big service providers for their cell phone, and we had them call them up and ask them for their own location data. And you would think that that's my data, right? So I should be able to get it back. But actually, that's not true. All of the cell phone companies said, we just don't provide that. That's just not in our policy. And, you know, they're not obligated to provide it.
Is that true just in this country, or would it be just as true wherever I was?
Well, actually, the reason that we did this story is because in Germany, there was a politician who had the same idea. And he actually requested his data from his carrier, which was Deutsche Telekom, I think. And he got the data, but to get it, he had to actually go in and litigate, and it took him a long time. And the only reason he got it is because there are much stronger privacy protections in Europe.
It probably didn't hurt that he was also a powerful politician.
Exactly.
And I'd just say, actually, there's one interesting thing to add to this in terms of problems of this location technology and government or cell phone carrier use of it. And it's not so much one that's specific to the United States. But in foreign countries, particularly authoritarian or dictatorial countries, if the government is looking for you, if the government in Syria is looking for you, if the government in Zimbabwe is looking for you, they can use this location data that we're talking about to find you. And
even if you've left the country, have gone to the United States or to England.
Well, no, I'm talking about actually in those countries.
But
okay?
They probably can even outside, can't they?
Well,
if you're on one of their carriers.
Well, if you're Zimbabwean and you're in the United States, I think it would be difficult for the Zimbabwean government to find you because your phone location information would be kind of held by probably the local carrier that's, you know, transmitting and broadcasting your calls. But the problem is that in these countries, because these phones do provide this data to the cell phone companies and cell phone companies give them to the governments, it can be used really to track down good people who are doing good work, let's say in politics, and who are then thrown in jail and Lord knows what happens to them. So particularly in authoritarian countries, this technology in the hands of governments that use it in a really ill-intentioned way is very dangerous and potentially lethal.
You talk in your article about advertising agencies that can access our information. Can they tailor their ads to specific customers?
Yeah, they can. I do want to make clear that the cell phone companies say that they fully anonymize any data that they share with third parties. But the word anonymize can have many different meanings, and we're not really sure to what extent you really become anonymous, given all of the different types of data that various companies have about you and can put together.
Do you both have cell phones, smartphones?
I have a smartphone, and
I do as well.
Mega
yeah.
has a smartphone.
Have
as
you
well.
Taken precautions to guard your personal information? Can you?
Yeah, you know, before this, I lived in China for a long time, and that's one of the authoritarian states that Peter was just talking about that does a lot of tracking. And I was much more cautious when I was there. I would use filters on my internet and make sure that I was as anonymous as possible when browsing. But I've really let that slide since coming back to the U.S.
And, I mean, it worked in China?
Yeah, it works a little bit better in China.
I would just say myself, though I have a smartphone, an iPhone with lots of potentials for using apps, I don't use apps that much because I do find privacy issues to be problematic there. And I use location technology only when I need it. And if I were to go abroad to another country, particularly to an authoritarian country on a reporting trip, I would not take my phone with me. I would buy a burner there.
Mm-hmm. But what about just that convenience of hitting map and typing in the address that you're going to and having that little blue dot to show you that you're going the right way.
Just each time you want that location technology to be used, you then have to push OK.
But of course, you're not the only one who knows where your car is at that moment.
And then in that case, yes, that information is being shared with Google, and Google will do what it wants with it. And you know, who knows? But you can limit the number of times that you do that, and the number of companies with which you share that information.
Peter Maas and Megha Rajagopalan. Their article, That's No Phone, That's My Tracker, a collaboration between ProPublica and the New York Times. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.